This episode of Therapy Insiders is sponsored by WebPT, makers of the awesome and super popular EMR software. Recently, I spoke with WebPT COO and co-founder Heidi Janangam, and I asked her, what really separates WebPT from other EMR companies?
Actually, I think we're the only EMR company that does not charge you a service fee for live calls. So we have, live bodies here right in Arizona that are taking our customers' calls when they have a problem or answering emails when they send us a support ticket and they have a question about something.
WebPT, high-tech, awesome EMR, but with a human component. They're always ready to talk and listen. Check them out at www.webpt.com or give them a call for a free demo, 866-221-1870. Let them know Therapy Insider sent you. Hello, welcome back to Therapy Insiders. I'm Dr. Gene Shirakabrad here with Dr. Joe Palmer, Dr. Erson Religioso. We got the trifecta back together again. How's everyone doing?
Doing well, Gene.
I'm well, Gene.
All right, so over the last few episodes, we've had some pretty broad topics covered. Before that, we were talking a lot about business and branding and value and all that good stuff. And then we kind of shifted gears a little bit and talked about exercise and women's health and pelvic health with Julie Wiebe. And, we kind of go back and forth. So our next guest, who, before I get into it, I'm actually going to let Erson introduce him because he's on a hot streak of introductions. So why not keep it going? Our next guest combines kind of branding and business with exercise. So I think it's a perfect culmination of our recent episodes. So Erson, without further ado, let's see what you got.
Oh, geez, my palms are sweating. All right. Can I do a good job this time? I'm going for 3 for 3.
The anticipation is killing me.
Yeah, it's the turkey of bad introductions. That's what I'm going for.
More like a turducken.
Right. So our guest tonight, I know from social media, and also he is a Damon grad where I was faculty a couple years ago. So you're local to Buffalo, right?
Right, John? Yeah.
Okay. His name is Dr. John Russin. I would have said Rusin and totally botched the introduction, but I actually made sure to ask him. I was sure it was Rusin too, but it is Russin because it is a Polish thing, I hear.
So you learn. You learn.
It's I do. So
a little bit of pregame.
I tried to prepare for one episode. But like Gene said, he is into social media. He has a website. He merges rehab and fitness. He is known as the Strength Doc. He is into the FMS and SFMA movement in general. So I thought we'd invite him on and talk about all the things that we've been talking about in the previous episodes. I think it is a great segue into his particular area of expertise.
Welcome to the show, John.
Thanks, guys. Good to be here. Thanks for having me.
Let me ask you something before we get into all your cool stuff that you're doing. On your website, for to get your little three-part seminar or training, for the email stuff, you say burn your foam roller and give your tennis ball away to your dog. Have you ever actually tried to burn a foam roller?
I haven't burned one. I've cut a couple in half a time or two, but it hasn't hit the flames yet. And my dog's definitely got a couple tennis balls in his mouth. I think he's looking at it right now. So there is some truth to that.
I would love to see you light a foam roller on fire.
That seems toxic. I wouldn't do that.
I would think so too.
Don't try this at home, hashtag DPT students.
Yes, right. But it'd be kind of.
We are not liable for any injuries. because people burn their foam rollers.
I didn't say people burn their foam rollers. I said, John, will you actually burn a foam roller, put it on YouTube so then we can like put it up with his stuff, and it gives credence to what he's saying, because I think it'd be kind of, does foam burn?
I don't think so.
I don't think so either.
It's a science experiment.
With enough gasoline, anything burns.
That's right. Speaking of science, John, what brought you to this whole exercise/strength training medium? Seems like that's what you're really combining. And we talked a little bit about this with Chad Cook, which is, again, perfect timing for you as a guest, because one question I asked him is, are PTs really that good at exercise, at least resistance exercise? And it looks like that's what you're tilted towards. What have you seen, and then what made you want to really kind of find that niche?
So the answer to your question, a quick answer at least, is no, I don't think the average physical therapist coming out of a doctoral level education is super versed in strength and conditioning. You know, I think that's why there are two allied health professionals within the strength coach, personal trainer, and then people like us, the doctors of physical therapy. But my story is a little bit different than most. I started off as a strength and conditioning specialist. I worked in the high school and collegiate sector before I got into DPT school. So I wear both hats because I've been in both of those professions. So I tried to merge both of those things back together in my current practice and my current programming for my clients.
How's that merger been going for you?
Amazingly well. You know, everybody's banged up. You know, no matter who you are, you could be an NFL quarterback making $15 million a year. You could be a mother of five running your kids to soccer 7 days a week. Everybody has that big equalizer of posture in our society. As you guys well know, sleep isn't the best. Our stress levels are high. Just all of those things equate to bodies tending to fall apart. And then throw in on top of everything else training and unintelligently designed training, you really get something that there's a niche out there for people to do both things, trying to bridge the gap between performance, PT, fitness, and rehabilitation.
So how does that differ from a personal trainer, let's say?
Well, when people come in to see me in my brick and mortar practice, we don't see them as physical therapy patients. We don't see them as personal training clients. We see them as athletes, and we see them as quote unquote clients. So whatever they may need is what we give to them. So we have the ability to do things like manual therapy, but we also have the ability to train somebody with hardcore strength and conditioning just as you would anyone else that comes in uninhibited. So really having the ability to do both has been a pretty powerful thing, because a lot of times people aren't clear cut for one or the other. They're not clear cut that they have to go into 32 sessions of physical therapy, or they're ready to go to a personal trainer. There's always that gray area, even for high level athletes, that there needs to be a mesh between the two to get the ultimate performance, to get the ultimate pain alleviation, things along those lines.
What do you think about the personal trainers who probably start with the FMS or maybe some other sort of, assessment, and then they just start doing manual therapy? I mean, that, you know, PTs online who kind of go after that, or they maybe even ask for my help, like, hey, you know, let's try to shut this guy down, or I have a trainer in my gym and what can I do about this? And I tend not to get involved because I just know it's going to happen anyway, and I know it shouldn't be done, but it's going to be done anyway. And I know that, you know, a bunch of the PTs kind of got this one guy who was posting about doing dry needling and ISTM and everything, and he's just a personal trainer. They got him to stop blogging, but you know he's still doing it, right? So what do you think about that? And how many times have you encountered that out in California where you were before?
You know, that's something that we have some expertise in, because we're currently running a National Strength and Conditioning Association CEUs for strength coaches and personal trainers. And we are speaking on self-tissue, self-myofascial release and soft tissue management. So it is something that we have to reiterate, and then we have to repeat over and over again over the course of, a two-day mentorship when we're out at these facilities, that there is a fine line between being liable for something you are not licensed to do that is not within your scope of practice, such as manual therapy, and doing something that may be able to help your client or patient without actually breaking the law and breaking your scope of practice. So the way I really view it is, as soon as there's contact from a non-licensed professional onto a client with intent to mobilize soft tissue, that's where the line is drawn. So I always get the question from the trainers, well, what if I'm using cueing activations and I'm touching somebody to get them to move in a certain way? You know, that's fine. You don't have the intent to actually mobilize those tissues. You know, that's really the intent that you're going to go ahead and do that.
But you're combining your kind of model, sounds to me like, is you're breaking away conformist healthcare or traditional healthcare kind of walls and saying it doesn't matter to us whether you're coming in as a patient or a client. You're an athlete regardless whether you're a professional or you're a mother of five, and we're going to treat you with what you need, and whether that's, again, manual therapy or exercise, doesn't matter. You're going to combine it to each person and tailor it to them. So how do you sell that? Because do you take insurance? Or are you cash based?
I'm 100% cash based.
Right. So how do you sell that value to somebody that says, listen, this is not what you think. This is not how you've traditionally thought of physical therapy or working out. We're kind of doing what science tells you about tissue physiology, and two, we're going to combine some physical therapy principles. But this is a whole new beast, and sometimes when you have something that new, which is new to a lot of people, how do you sell them on that?
You know, the sales is in the results, you know, plain and simple. If you produce results for people and you continue to produce results, you're going to have referrals. You're going to have people knocking down your doors to try to get in. And we have a very niche practice where we see really one percenters or people aspiring to be those one percenters. What I mean by that is they're triathletes, they're bodybuilders, Olympic weightlifters, competitive CrossFitters, the people that truly have a passion for performance, they have a passion for their body, and more so than anything, they are really interested in learning more about their body, because a lot of what we do is education so they can become self-sufficient with their own practice. Because at the end of the day, if we could give people the tools for them to be self-sufficient, that would be the ultimate in my book.
I thought you were talking about billionaires for a second, the one percenter. I was like, yeah, no shit, yeah, you have a niche practice.
that's a good patient population.
Not bad.
That is.
Let me know if you need more physical therapists. I'll fly over there.
What made you decide to go get your DBT?
You know, long story short, I was straight out of undergrad. You know, I got my fresh CSCS, got my fresh exercise science degree. I was lucky enough to have an opportunity to go right into the local university, which was in D1 school, and get a job in their varsity weight room right away. So I spent about 3 months there. I loved it. It was awesome. You know, that was my top end job at the time. I was like, this is where I want to be for the next 60 years. So a little bit of background on my household. Both of my parents have PhDs. So, you know, 3 months goes by and they say, John, I don't think this is what you're really meant to do long term. I think you should go get some more education. So at the time, I'm like, yeah, okay, you know, they know what they're doing. They're very well-educated people. They've done very well in their own careers.
Did they have a placeholder on the wall for your doctorate? Like, is it mom, Dr. Mom, well, Dr. Dad,
did.
And like an empty spot for John?
You know, we would send out, after I graduated, Dr. Doctor and Dr. Russin. So that was cool for them. So every time we sent out a letter, you know, from the family, that was the only placeholder we had. But you know, after that, my mom is on the faculty at Damon College, my alma mater, and I ended up going into the DPT program. But I always had that vision that I was going to make it back into strength and conditioning. I was going to make it back into high performance. And it seems crazy. It's like, well, dude, you're already there. You know, you were already at the top of the profession, you know, in collegiate setting, strength and conditioning. Like, why would you want to go back? But really using that 3.5 years of education, using the practical knowledge, and using the time to just grow as a person in DPT school really exponentiated things when I did get I did get my degree, and I took my first job bridging both of those things right away, which was exciting.
What's been the most challenging thing in creating that bridge or doing cash based? I'm sure as much as it grows, and I'm sure, like you said, word of mouth and the results help drive more people to you, but there's always challenges in starting up something like you are starting up. So you share some of those.
Yeah, every step of the way has been a challenge, to be honest. We write on a big stage on some of the major fitness websites, and that leads to us getting a lot of mail from DPT students, exercise science students, you know, people that are new in both of those professions asking, okay, how do I do what you do? And it's tough because you want to give them a straight answer, but really the answer is you got to take it over the head for a couple of years, and you really have to struggle, and you really have to prove yourself and build up client by client and build a reputation that people are going to pay cash rates for your services. They are going to come in and do something that they aren't familiar with. Everyone wants to know the one thing that, oh yeah, you're a physical therapist. Oh yeah, I know about that. I know a physical therapist. They want to put a label on something. Oh, you're a personal trainer. I know a personal trainer. I know what they do. But when you say that you're something that doesn't quite exist yet and they haven't thought about, it takes them a time or two to really buy into the system. But again, I'll say the same thing. Once they come in, once they see the benefit of what you're doing above and beyond what they thought was possible, that's the biggest selling point. And in our kind of niche, in our demographic of clients and patients, they're people that are highly passionate, and they're passionate about talking what they're passionate about. So they're going to go to try practice, and they're going to tell all their teammates what they just had done, you know, their soft tissue session followed by, you know, an hour and a half of hardcore strength. They're going to talk about that. You know, bodybuilder goes on stage and he's at a competition and he does very well on stage, places in his competition, he's going to know and tell every single person who he's coaching with and how he got that body. So we really rely on testimonials. We really rely on trying to over-deliver our process and our services for people to the point where the referrals, one, come through, but also we maintain a client list both online and in person that are lifelong customers.
So you're not just a president, you're also a client, right? That it's not CG on the website, right? Bang for your buck, what would you say are your most favorite functional exercises that kind of cross over from the strength training world and you use to rehab first and then, you know, say someone's not appropriate for fitness yet? Because I know Gray has his list, and I'm a fan of his, you know, kind of big three or four functional exercises. What do you think about those? What are your big ones to teach in the rehab setting?
You know, in the rehab setting, it looks very similar to my strength and conditioning setting. I just wrote an article a couple weeks back on Testosterone Nation about this exact question, and it was the five movements that you're going to do the rest of your life to enhance your orthopedic health. So I really sat down and I looked at what I use as a practitioner, what I use as a strength coach, what I use as a personal trainer, and really everything. And we came up with a list that was a combination between isolated movements, compound movements, you know, big loaded movements, and neural activation movements. And I think the list offhand was face pulls, glute bridging variations, squat and deadlift was number one, and then a loaded carry variation was in there somewhere. So those were my big five. And really people were like, well, you know, everyone's not ready to squat. Everyone's not ready to deadlift. I would argue that point by saying that a squat doesn't mean that you have to throw 225 on a straight bar, throw it on your back and do reps of 20.
As a warm-up,
you
know,
a squat is a fundamental movement pattern. It's a fundamental movement pattern that every single person, no matter if you're 5 years old or 95 years old, needs to be able to practice in some way on a daily basis. So we're not talking about loaded movement and hardcore training. We're talking about just the foundational, fundamental movement. So a hip hinge has largely been lost in our Western society. You know, as a strength training coach.
What is a hip hinge? Can you define that?
So a hip hinge would be a loaded movement or an unloaded movement similar to a hip heavy movement like a deadlift. So a majority of the movement and the torque force is coming from hip as opposed to knee. So the big differentiation between the squat and the deadlift is the angle that the knee goes through, the range of motion that the knee goes through. And that also has to do with activation patterns and specific targeted muscles that are used in both of those movements. But the deadlift's been largely lost. So we're really putting, you know, performance athletes back to square one, almost rehab-esque neuromuscular retraining for the hip hinge. We're placing squats in that same exact way. You know, we use the 4x4s that have been popularized by the SFMA. I've been working with Gray and the FMS for about 2 years now, consulting for them. I'm a huge proponent for their system, and especially the corrective exercises that you can give after you do your initial eval or your initial client sessions. I think just getting as much data as possible on those and prioritizing the movements that are really going to work for a lifetime is huge.
Yeah, I like the normative data that the FMS presents, in that there's very little movement variation as long as there's not significant deformities or orthopedic problems, you know, from the ages of, you know, children to 60 to 70, there should be little variation as long as there's not significant orthopedic problems. And, you know, I definitely saw that when I went to the Philippines. I mean, especially in the poorer areas, people are just squatting everywhere. And you see like these 80-year-olds who are just like hanging out and squatting and talking for hours. They just like squat on the street. So yeah, you definitely, if you don't move it, you lose it. And I am a big fan of the hip hinge and the deadlift.
You know, if you look at societies around the world, the one differentiating factor between people that can squat correctly and that cannot squat correctly are the ones that literally have to go into that motion two or three times a day, depending on how regular you are, to actually go to the bathroom. So if you're forced to go down there to get in that position in order to relieve yourself, you're probably going to have that mobility, or you're going to have some serious issues. It's just something that you grow up with. You know, when I consulted for the Chinese Olympic Committee over the New Year's, I was over there for 2 months, and there were no Western toilets there. There was only the holes in the ground where you had to go. And, you know, me thinking I had some great mobility, you know, I work on this stuff every day. I think I'm an expert in mobility and regeneration. I get down, I had a hard time. I know that's a little graphic for you guys, but.
Oh, you become an expert when you have to be an expert.
Exactly.
Right.
The toilet
well,
paper situation was a different story.
That's a different kind of functional squat there, right? So you didn't do any training specificity for that, just the mobility only.
Forget the exactly. 225 on your shoulders. You just need to do the two. Oh, you see what I did there? You see what
nice.
I did?
Thank yes. You. Thank we you. All see that.
Thank you. I'm almost a professional. So that's really cool. I mean, you're doing a lot of stuff, and I think obviously the incorporation of squats. I can't imagine anybody at this point arguing that squats are not beneficial or good. I think the big point of coming around is what you do with the squat. So functional squats like going to the bathroom are obviously important, but a lot of people are not comfortable squatting with weight, doing the loading. I think most clinics, maybe arguably not more than 90% of clinics, won't have the weight to sustain that kind of squatting. So how do you educate, or you know, if you get a ton of emails and you get people asking, how do you do this? How do you do that? What do you tell them when you say, okay, do you get your patients or clients actually lifting weight? And they go, yeah, we do some resistance bands or TRX, which we use at the clinic, and they're great. But what do you do when people don't have the weight to do it?
You know, that's a different story where there's literally those external environmental roadblocks. You know, there are ways to get around it. There are ways to incorporate band work, but you know, some of the biggest things that you could put in your clinic to actually start some resisted loaded training are simple things like kettlebells. You know, it doesn't take a whole lot of load to get some activation and some firing patterns really linked up in your system using, say, a kettlebell goblet squat. You just have to use what you have to your advantage, but you also have to prioritize what's going to be the best situation for your client. And who's to say that, you know, maybe referring them back out into a facility that would have some of those other things could be a good idea, especially if you have a good network of people that you work with in your community. But really, there's a lot of graduation that has to happen before you get to the point where, okay, we're ready to use the barbell. You know, very select few are ready to use the barbell, and you really have to earn the right to load the barbell and load the barbell heavy. So there's a lot of intermediate factors that go in, a lot of progressions and regressions to all these foundational movements.
Is there somewhere, have you written about something like that, where let's say a clinic is getting started and they want to incorporate resistance training and higher level load? Have you ever written a step-by-step guide, start with this equipment, this is, you know, a low-level cost, a mid-level cost, a higher-level cost of building out something, a clinic of that sort?
You know, I haven't specifically written articles about it, but we have remote training clients from all around the world. And sometimes it's to the point where they have such great success on our programs that they end up building, you know, little facilities in their home. So they go out in their garage, they go in their basement, and we strategically put in little tool by little tool. And it really shows that you can do a whole lot with body weight. Literally, you can do a lot with body weight. You know, the next thing to add in would be a little bit of accommodating resistance. So you can get that through bands, you know, circular bands, handled bands, whatever it may be, at a very low cost. From there, we can really look at adding in some sort of external resistance. So my fan would be kettlebells. By no means am I a kettlebell guy, but for the best bang for your buck movements, kettlebells could be a great addition. From there, working into dumbbells, and then ultimately getting a portion of your home gym or your facility where you could potentially put in barbell training. Don't even need the rack. You know, anything that you can't take from the ground up into a racked position or push press to a back squat position, if you can't handle it to get it up there, it's probably too heavy for you anyways. So really just earning the right to train with each tool and really going up on the progression.
Very cool. So Joe, let me ask you, you have a private practice, manual therapy clinic. Is this something you would ever consider building into your clinic? Because you see all age and gender demographics. Is this realistic, feasible, part of the business plan?
You know, I think that there is a niche. I'd be lying to you if I told you that I thought we were in that niche. I think that it's a necessary. I think that it's definitely a necessary part of the recovery process, but I do not see. I do not see active life and sports as developing the service. I think we'd refer out to the next level of strength and conditioning professional. I think that the small portion that we see that would truly thrive in a space like that.
Well, let me ask you this. What if we're always talking about extra or different solutions for increased secondary revenue streams, and with reimbursements going down, sorry, Jerry, from insurance companies, clinics are always looking to bring in more revenue without really hurting patient care. What about building out, developing that niche? Let's say if John does consulting to clinics to train one of your PTs, or you hire a special PT just for this, and you start a separate within your clinic, a cash-based part of more resistance training / PT, kind of what John is doing. Is that a realistic possibility, or is it cost dependent? I mean, what would you have to have in line to seriously consider something like that?
Yeah, no, I think that's a realistic possibility. I don't think that trying to force fit something into the specialties and demographics that we currently see is the correct solution. But to develop and market towards that specialty, that's a viable solution. I just currently, in what we do, I don't think it would be a successful fit. Now, if we decided to have somebody specifically trained and market towards that niche, then yes, I think John's shown that it can be successful. I don't think that's the question.
So John, what would it take for a clinic, let's say a private practice clinic that's listening and is like, okay, this is not a bad idea to start a cash based at least portion of the clinic, or get a couple or a person or two, or even a contractor of sorts to do this on some kind of split equity, shared equity type of thing? What would you
recommend? I'm going to cut John off here because he's not going to say it, but it's going to take somebody like John. It's going to take somebody that has the drive and the passion and the experience necessary, and you don't find those PTs everywhere. So that's the hesitation. You can't just stick somebody in that role and expect them to get results like John is getting. So that's the hesitation.
Well, you shouldn't stick anybody in any role, whether it's somebody like John or hiring somebody for your clinic, because that's your clinic culture. But how do you go about, John? How do you hire a John? What would you do if you're consulting with somebody and they say, John, I want you. What do I have to do? Or what do I have to ask? What do I have to look for to get somebody like you? Minus cloning. We don't believe in cloning.
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head going back to what you were saying about maybe getting some sort of sister company in a profit share system. You know, I grew up in my professional career always being in a multidisciplinary practice. I have never worked a day in my life that wasn't in a practice that didn't have strength and conditioning, physical therapy, chiropractic, and massage therapy, to put everything in perspective there. So really, I know nothing different than what I'm currently doing. So I don't know the system that you guys are running from a logistics standpoint, because I was thrown right into the fire right away because I knew what I wanted to do. But there are a lot of people out there, I think, with the passion to do both. The biggest differentiator is when those passionate individuals that may have been strength coaches before they went to PT school, when they get out of school, are they going to make the choice to turn down an $80,000 or $90,000 position at a skilled rehab facility, you know, doing travel, to go in and make half the money, work twice the hours, and really build something from the ground up that's going against the current system? So that's really the question. So it's an individualistic thing. You need to find people that are going to be passionate, and they're going to be passionate for the right reasons. So a lot of the emails that we field, we say, hey, you know, get ready for a ride the first 5 years or so, because you just don't know where this thing's going if you do want to get into this dual role. And it's something that it takes a special person to do. I was lucky to have been mentored right away by some very, very good coaches that sat on that bridge between the two professions. And they were able to do both very precisely from their programming, but also from the regeneration techniques and the rehab therapy techniques. So, you know, just to put that in perspective, I run this practice this way because this is what I've seen success with, and this is really the only way that I know, just because it's been in my mind since I entered PT school, that I think this was going to be the type of practice that I was going to be running.
How do you define passion? What is that to you?
Passions, if you were to say that nobody was going to give you a dollar for the next 10 years to do something, and you would have to struggle, you would have to, you know, go paycheck to paycheck, you would have to work, you know, 7 in the morning till 10 at night most days of the week, you'd have to work on the weekends, and you would not get paid except for as much as you would have just to eat and to live, would you still do that same thing? Would you put the same pride into that same practice that you did every single day, even knowing that it wouldn't be ultimately, you know, a huge moneymaker for you right away? And if they're able to do that, that's always going to be a good situation. So for us, we always have the option to bring in interns. We have the option to go through the vetting process on our interns, put them through some interviews, put them through whatever we want to before we bring them into our facilities. But even at that, you know, they're still students. So I really believe that you can tell a lot by somebody, one, by having them in your facility for a long period of time, but also when push comes to shove, are they going to make the right decision for the right reasons? And if they are, you know you have somebody special.
So is there a difference between perseverance and passion, or how do you differentiate that? Because we're all four of us here are business owners, right? Whether again, depending whether it's clinics, it's or products or content or media, whatever it is, we're all in the realm of business here, and we're all in the realm of branding. And I think to be a successful brand, and I would get told this all the time, is that you're going to succeed because you have passion. And for the longest time, I had absolutely no idea what that meant, because I was doing stuff for different goals, and I liked doing it. I never felt like it was hard, really. But I felt like a lot of it was perseverance, because like you said, when you're starting out, it's never easy when you're starting out. People usually see, by the time people are sending you emails and contacts and asking you how to do it, they see more of the polished product. They didn't see the struggles that you were doing and figuring out how to blog and figuring out how to write content and spending hours on end with web developers tweaking your website to get your personal brand exactly how you want it. They don't see stuff like that, but that's the stuff you go through. So how do you maintain that consistent drive and excitement and determination through that trough of sorrow that everybody goes through that moments that you're like, man, is this really what I want to do? Is this really worth it? Should I go to that $80,000 or $90,000, travel PT? How do you maintain that mental strength and still have that inner excitement to drive towards a goal?
You know, me personally, if I wasn't in the profession, I would still be doing this stuff. I would still be reading everything I possibly could. I'd be trying to learn as much about my body as I possibly could. I would be training 2 hours a day, you know, like I was a professional athlete. And I would really be trying to live a lifestyle that I was proud of. You know, no matter if I was a practitioner, I was Dr. John, or I was literally doing a desk job 9 to 5 for the rest of my life until I hit 65. So I believe that people would be doing their true passion, no matter if that's their job or not. But really trying to stay fresh on it on a daily basis, it's easy in our household. We just try to be as good at examples for, you know, our daughter as we possibly can. And we have one on the way here. We got a boy coming.
Hey, congrats.
Oh, thank you. But every single day, you know, our daughter knows that, hey, you know, it's 9 o'clock. Okay, mommy and daddy are going to go to the gym. They're going to be there for 2 hours. Like, okay. And now she's, you know, she's only 5, but she's starting to get trying to work out and do some movement and things like that. You know, she sees mom and dad foam rolling on the ground when we're watching TV or doing something as a family. She's doing that same stuff. She knows about it. She knows that she's going to be eating right. You know, at 5 years old, like knowing about vegetables and protein, it's unbelievable. Not that we're pushing any of this stuff. We never push the stuff, but it's just the osmosis effect of, you know, the positivity, living that kind of lifestyle and that kind of passion, and knowing that, hey, mommy and daddy are at the office, and we can, my fiance also works with us, so she's my business partner in all of this. So, you know, it's not just Dr. John against the world. You know, we have two on this front, which has really made a big difference, especially in this current practice. But doing those things for the right reasons and having that osmosis effect and seeing cool stuff like, you know, a 5-year-old making a good decision, you're like, all right, cool. We didn't even have to tell her to do that. You know, she just kind of knows that's the way things should be done. And, you know, that effect keeps you fresh. But also, you know, kind of being more of the public spotlight, you know, with the writing and the speaking, it's always good to have a reality check now and then. So knowing that what you wrote, what you're saying is going to go out to a bunch of people. And if it's not solid, you're going to hear about it. You're going to hear about it 500 emails and 1,000 YouTube comments later. So, you know, just continuously trying to stay fresh with everything and evolved with your branding and your content. It keeps everything fresh. You know, every single day there's something new that's going to come out that you're either going to, you know, dismiss from your ideas of what you want to do in your practice, or you're going to adopt those ideas. But just continuously trying to get better and trying to learn. It's every day looks like the next day, but if you can just, you know, put together years, decades of this kind of experience, it's really going to pay off in the end. And if you're truly passionate, you know, you're going to love every one of those days.
So if your daughter sees you foam rolling, then we might want to scrap that idea of setting foam rollers on fire. Let's just go ahead. Let's go ahead and pretend that didn't happen, and we'll move on. Ersin, you have a few daughters, and I'm sure that that's a driving motivator for you, is to always set a good example. But you also, you made a transition from full-time clinical practice, and you're doing a bunch of stuff before, to creating a product. I mean, that wasn't an easy transition by any means. I can relate because I had the same thing. What do you do daily with the blogging, and how do you maintain that passion for what you do?
Well, I think a lot of what John said is definitely great advice. And for me, it's basically hanging out with like-minded people. Like, I definitely have a great and passionate following. And if any of my blog readers are listening, then thank you very much for supporting me on multiple fronts. And like John said, if you write something that someone disagrees with, I mean, one of the things about the internet is it gives idiots a voice, and everyone has an opinion, and basically someone is going to think you're wrong. And basically, you know, I've learned to debate as long as it's healthy debate, but basically, you know, from the moment of certain emails or Facebook or Twitter comments that you just don't want to interact with this person. So I've just learned to block and to ban, whether you're talking Twitter or Facebook, and to, again, just basically hang out with like-minded, passionate individuals who share similar interests. It's how Gene and I got together. You know, that makes it a lot easier, I think, if your peers and your friends and your family kind of all support you. And certainly I've received challenges and people just thought I couldn't do it. But for me, it was a matter of feast or famine, because when my wife decided that she couldn't go back to work when we had Emmy, our third baby, you know, I just started doing all this stuff on my own. And I just thought, I have to be successful, you know, and it's just one of those things too. I'm just driven to be successful because I love teaching, I love mentoring, and you know, all the product stuff, that was just a bonus on top of it.
Yeah, I think that pretty much sums it up. I think one of the things that took me a while to get comfortable with, and I'm still getting comfortable with this, is, you know, the ever popular gut feeling. And kind of listening to your gut, and you know, you have this internal compass of determining whether that's, you know, something that you're truly want to do, or something that you're truly good at. But so many of us, we tune that down and do what we feel or we think we have to do to either pay the bills or make somebody happy. But the more we tune that down, the less and less adept we are at actually hearing our internal gut feeling and compass. And I think that becomes a tough thing to recalibrate later. And if you're lucky enough to listen early on and follow your passion like John, and eventually like you, Ersin, I think that's a strong, powerful thing. And when you hang out with like-minded people, like you said, I think it makes it, you kind of get that rekindling, you get that excitement again, and you really understand what passion is, because you see it, and more importantly, you feel it when you talk to somebody that has it, and you kind of get that idea. So it's the same thing, and listening to John, you could definitely hear it, because not only does he say it, but he actually does it, which is a unique thing in itself, John.
Yeah, and you always have to remember that, you know, drive your passion forward, because you're always one big break away from doing what you always thought you could do. You know, I'm no exception to that rule. You know, things exploded for us like seemingly overnight. And just like people only see the what's currently happening with your practice and your brand, they don't see all the back work that went into it. So literally overnight, if you're doing the right stuff with the right breaks, you can really make something of your dreams.
I think that's a good way to close it out. What do you guys think? Any closing thoughts, Joe?
No, I think it's a great model, and I'm glad John's finding success with it. I'd be interested in hearing more about it, and you know, possibly looking into introducing some kind of aspect of it into our practice. I do have to take a step out here and just give a shout out to my brother Mike, who just found out that he passed his OCS today. So, congratulations, buddy!
Shout out! Oh.
Congratulations! I didn't know you had a brother as a PT. Awesome!
Yeah. Yeah, so he just found out today. He gave me a call, and so, yeah, giving him a little shout out. He's up at Delaware University. He trains their athletes now.
So wait, now we have 7 listeners.
Yeah, that's right.
Actually, 9. We're up to 9 now.
Oh, nice.
It's a solid 9. So
John listened today too. So actually, maybe it's even 10.
Well, he's got to stick around. So let's be conservative here. So congrats, Mike. Awesome stuff. Look forward to hearing big things from you. Urs, any closing thoughts?
Yeah, my closing thoughts are, you know, if you're interested in John's model, but like Joe and like myself and like many other clinic owners, you're not quite ready to fully adopt that. Like I'm probably 25% of the way there. There are organizations, and maybe John would be willing to consult with you, but there are organizations that actually help you set up this model with a PT and with a trainer. And I think it can be very lucrative, but like anything else, you have to have a trainer who you could trust, who you can pass off the correctives to or pass off the strength training to. And it's kind of like the PT's job to get all the mobility and modulate the pain and do all that education. And then you pass them off to the trainer to do all the skilled rehab and the strengthening and conditioning. So that way you retain the client who was formerly a patient and they can transition in and out. And I think that can be very lucrative. So there are organizations that do that. And you know, maybe John does that too, and consulting aside. So I think that you don't necessarily have to do it yourself. Other people can kind of show you how to do it on your own. So you don't do it on your own, I should say.
So John, if our listeners, all 9 of them, want to find more of your stuff and or hear more about it, where can they find you?
Our big hub is our website, www.drjohnrussin.com, drjohnrussin.com. We're also over on Facebook, John Russin Fitness Systems, and on Twitter, handle, John Russin.
That's simple enough. John, thanks for joining us, and always the guest. Any final thoughts?
Yeah, I think we covered a lot of good stuff today, but always just thinking about doing the right things for the right reasons and just moving forward with that thought. But I appreciate you guys having me on. It was a blast.
Awesome, man. Thanks for joining us. And remember, like Urson said, you have a lot of like-minded individuals that are very, very willing to talk and help and answer questions, whether it's on Twitter, whether it's through email. So don't hesitate, reach out. I've had a ton of DPT students sending messages and emails, and it's been great. It's been great talking with you. So keep it going. You know, it's sometimes you don't even know what your passion is until you talk to somebody that's been doing it, and vice versa. So thanks a lot for listening. As always, check us out at therapyinsiders.com. Our new UpDoc Media page will be up very soon. So if you haven't followed us on Twitter yet, check us out at UpDoc Media. We'll be blasting out a lot of cool stuff very soon, and some more podcasts coming your way, which we'll be announcing. If you didn't hear last time, Dr. Ben Fung will be joining us at UpDoc Media as our blogger, vlogger, and some other cool stuff at helping us make and publish content. So check out Dr. Ben Fung as well. And as always, please leave us a review on iTunes. Just type in Therapy Insiders on iTunes. The reviews really help us out. We've gotten a bunch over the last 2 weeks to the point that propelled us to number one medical podcast a few weeks ago. So that was really cool. So we really appreciate your help. And if you can just leave us a review or rating, whatever you think, we really appreciate it. So that's at iTunes, Therapy Insiders. So again, thanks a lot for joining us. We'll catch you next time.